Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, those are the kinds of things that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And we understand that it's part of the business. And it's also part of just being a decent person, right? So, you know, you can't always know what the person is going through. I'll never know 100%, but there are patterns that happen, and we've seen these things.
Welcome back to the Injury Pros Podcast. I'm Todd Saylor from Cordisco and Sale. And I'm here today with local attorney, Dmitry Smirnov. Hi, Dmitry.
Thank you for having me. How you guys doing today?
Good. How about yourself?
Not too bad.
Before I get into like an intro, what kind of law do you practice?
So we primarily will practice family law. So percentage-wise, I would say it's about 75-80% of the practice. Other than that, we do civil litigation. Recently, we've been getting a lot of contractors whose insurance companies are denying them coverage, but they're getting sued by, you know, homeowners, property owners for, let's say, faulty or alleged faulty work.
Okay.
So we'll get those. We also do real estate stuff, things like evictions, ejectments, obviously evictions, tenants paying the rent, usually in C, a bulk of which is in Philadelphia. But we do the surrounding counties also, Bucks County, Monco. We go into Delco sometimes. But there's also ejectments that we do where, you know, you got squatters. Sometimes you have people who aren't paying their mortgage, property gets foreclosed on, and they don't want to leave. So the new owner has to get property, you know, possession of the property. So, you know, we'll do that kind of thing for them.
Okay.
So, yeah, just general gist.
All right, good. I think we'll probably talk and focus today on mostly the family law element because it probably closely mirrors what we do here because we're both dealing with clients going through a difficult time in their lives. So I think there's some synergy or similarity there.
No, right? Absolutely. I will tell you that, listen, personal injury is, and again, you guys are the experts, but obviously that's a lot of physical pain and there's things that happen outside of that. But when you're dealing with family law, I think the biggest thing winds up happening is that people are at their most heightened emotion, right? They're angry, they're upset. We actually get shocked if people can agree to something, right? Usually those are the ones that are like, are you sure you want to argue a little bit? But no, you know, those are the better parts of people. But here you're really digging into their personal lives, their, you know, everyday, day-to-day activities. Husbands and wives who don't get along, obviously, so they're going to file for divorce, then they're fighting over kids,
right?
Money, assets.
And there's a lot of emotional elements to both practices.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But before we get into all that, I just want to tell everybody how we met, which I think was interesting and was fun.
Oh, absolutely.
That I coached your son, Tyler, who we called Big T, right?
It's funny to say that because I think they still call him Big T.
Really?
So, yeah, definitely. It was in Holland, right?
Right. Holland baseball.
Yeah, and Tyler, I think, large part, thanks to you, is now playing for Lower Moreland's varsity team.
That's awesome.
He's in his senior year, which is crazy because I think when we met, he was probably, what were they, maybe like 8 or 9 years old?
I think they were.
They had 10?
Yeah, 9 at the.
So it's crazy how far, you know. Both kids are
maybe or old. I forget whether he was on the first team I coached or not.
It was the 8-year-olds, I think.
Maybe it was the 8-year-old team. Yeah, he stood out a lot in my mind. I mean, I love coaching the kids. It was a lot of fun and a lot of fun teaching them. But, you know, I saw him and he was such a big kid. And I thought, you know, if I could teach this kid how to hit right and fix his swing, you know, fix a few things, he can really nail that ball. I'm sure I blast him, right? So, but I don't know if you remember, we started off where, and anybody that knows anything about baseball, you know, you with your front foot, you step towards the baseball, which Steve DeBonis, an attorney here, could tell us because he played in college. He'd probably say better than me, but Big T kept stepping back with his front foot, right?
Yeah,
and I couldn't break him of it.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So then, and this probably wasn't a good idea for an injury attorney, but I don't know if you remember, I put a bucket of balls behind his front foot so he couldn't step back. And luckily, he didn't step back or he may have fallen over backwards. So, and that fixed that problem. Right?
I do remember that. I do remember that because he would come home after that and he would say, Coach Taylor, Coach Todd, he's making me do this bucket thing again. But I'll tell you, He's obviously now grown, and the thing about it is now that he's got this power swing.
Right.
They have him playing first base.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, and you know, there are times when I talk to him and, you know, we're talking about baseball and we're remembering those earlier times because I think that's where it starts, right?
Right. You have to build a good habit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like anything else.
Yeah. And listen, if you have good coaches at the beginning, your chances for success go up. So obviously, right. You know, you did a fantastic job.
Well, I appreciate that. And one of my proudest moments was, I don't probably remember, in a playoff game, and he always hit the ball pretty good, but in the playoff game, we were only up by maybe one run or something, and he came up with a couple guys on, and man, he just blasted that ball to the outfield and hit a double to kind of seal the game. And, you know, back at that time, it took him a long time to get down to first base, and for him to get to second, you know, he hit that thing a long way, right?
I'll tell you, you know why I remember that game? Because I was standing there watching it with the other parents, and I turned to the other parents, and as soon as he got that hit, I was like, oh, man, now I owe him $5. And they're like, well, what do you mean, why? And I said, well, listen, I promised him $5 for every hit that he gets, so I think he really needed it. So, yeah, he did really well. I remember that. I can picture it, actually, as if it were yesterday.
That's great that he had success and now a varsity player. It makes things rewarding when you're coaching. But, yeah, so that's how we met, which was a fun year.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, switching gears a little bit here, you know, in these injury cases, sometimes it can be difficult to see the changes that happen in these people's lives, right? That, you know, one day they're fine, they're driving down the street, they're productive, they have a good job, you know, they're active with their kids and things. And then somebody nails them, you know, and their whole lives change in an instant. It's kind of scary in a one way that could happen to you or your family members. But then, and you also really feel bad for them that what they're going through, you know, and that's just something we have to cope with. And, you know, I was thinking family law is probably similar, right? That these people are also going through a very difficult time in their lives. You see that?
Yeah, for sure. I'll tell you that, especially when it comes to divorce, right? I mean, listen, when you're talking about money, where it's like that's what child support comes in, or, you know, alimony or spouse support, where one of the parties has to pay the other for some reason. But when you're talking about a divorce and custody, that hits to the core, right?
Right.
Literally, you're every day, much like a, you know, personal injury, you know, an individual who's been injured in a car accident or something like that, their day-to-day changes.
Right.
So, listen, you wake up one day, you're married with two kids, and then you know, the next day, next thing you know, you're being served with divorce paperwork. You got to figure out life all over again.
Right.
And that's hard. We're, you know, people are creatures of habit, at least I believe. And what'll happen is that, you know, you turn somebody's world upside down, and sometimes it's hard to figure out how a person's going to react to that. Right. Listen, they're used to seeing their kids every day. Now they're seeing them every other weekend.
Right.
You know, you're used to going out on a Saturday night, you know, with your wife to a restaurant. Now you're on your own and you got to get into the dating pool again if you want to do that.
Yeah.
So life altering, right? And then sometimes it brings out the best, but sometimes it brings out the worst.
Yes.
Yeah, it is an emotional issue.
What are the hardest cases you see? I mean, is it the custody cases? Is that so probably the hardest?
I will tell you, yeah, I think it's the custody cases, right? And what I've learned over the years is, oddly, sometimes I wonder if people care about the kids, right? Because if there's a situation where, especially those cases where divorce is unexpected, perhaps there was extramarital affair or something occurred in that issue. And, you know, or people just have grown apart. But one side anticipates that it's going to happen. The other side is blindsided by it.
Right.
But when you get it, then you come into this custody situation where you're like, okay, we're not going to be living together anymore. We're going to be living apart. Now what? Right. But those custody cases where the kids, right, it becomes, okay, so where's the kid? Where are the kids going to live? Right. But sometimes people will use those kids as a pawn to get back at the other party.
Or to get money from the other spouse.
Sure. And it's not really, you know, listen, sometimes people don't care, which is amazing to me. They don't care how they're, you know, hurting the child, right?
Right.
So we'll have parents, let's say, that withhold kids from, you know, the other parent and say, like you said, you know, give me an extra $100 a month or you're not seeing this kid anymore. And then next thing you know, you got to go through the court system to do that. But the courts don't move as fast as everyday life.
Right.
So what will happen is, you know, you might be 2-3 months down the line before something gets changed. But in the meantime, a parent has seen their child twice, right? All because the parent who the kid is living with is using that child against the other parent. Those are tough.
And you've probably been on both sides of that, right? I mean, you would like to think that all your clients are not going to use the children as pawns, but, you know, let's face it, it probably happens, right? So it's probably easier to defend or represent the spouse who's on the other side of that. But how do you handle it when you have one that you think is kind of going to those lengths where they're using the children for their own benefit?
So basically, I think the gist of it becomes that you have to explain to them as if, you know, how are they going to explain their actions when they're sitting in front of a judge?
Right.
So if you have the child, let's say, and you're using the child as a pawn today, you've kept the child for 2 months. Let's just say for argument's sake. Now you get into court, you have to explain why you withheld the child for 2 months if your reasoning isn't good. And listen, you can't advocate and say to withhold from the other parent, but then there are good reasons.
Right.
Maybe the child is being abused by the opposite parent who doesn't have it. But let's just say,
or they have an addiction issue or something and they're not safe to be around a short child.
I mean, we've seen cases where children were taken on a ride to the city or to wherever to get their drug fix. And they're having the 4-year-old child sitting in the back of the car.
Wow.
Right? So there are times where withholding a child has its reasons. But again, you're going to have to explain those reasons to a judge.
Right.
And the people that use the kids as a pawn are going to have to understand that their reasons better be good. Because, okay, you had the child for 2 months now. But what if you go in front of a judge and the judge says, well, you kept the child because you wanted an extra $100 in child support? Why? Because you wanted to, you know, buy an extra pair of sneakers for yourself or something like that?
Right.
Sorry.
And you're a good person, I know, because I know you personally. So
yeah.
I'm sure you want to try to, you know, influence it so that your clients are doing the right thing also.
It's a delicate balance because sometimes I think the biggest problem that we have, I think, as family law attorneys, you know, and I've spoken to other family law attorneys, obviously, and they have the same issue, is that balancing it, right? Because some people just want to fight, right?
Especially because it's an emotional issue.
And the job of the attorney is to sit back and make sure that it's not an emotional decision that somebody's making, that it's based on rationale, reasons, and that it's, you know, it's legitimate. You know, for example, if you, like I just mentioned, the idea of, you know, well, listen, mom took the kid down to, you know, her local drug dealer. She bought heroin and she had a 4-year-old in the backseat. Clearly, if the other parent gets a hold of the child and keeps the child, almost guarantee that the, you know, court is going to say, well, you were justified.
Right. Right. Right.
But yeah, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, we have to balance the idea that a client wants you to be a zealous advocate.
Right. Right. Right.
However, you can't be so immersed in the other side and your client's position because then you start to lose the forest for the trees.
Right.
Right. And you have to balance that on the court. Right. In the sense of, well, we, you know, because different judges have make different decisions. You could go into, you know, you can go in front of a family court judge in Philadelphia. He'll make a decision X, whatever that may be. And then you'll go to a Bucks County family court judge on the same set of facts, same people, and he'll decide something completely different.
Right.
So it's hard. I mean, it's emotionally taxing. I think it's draining. I mean, listen, for you guys, I think it's that way too. If you have somebody who's, let's say, a paraplegic and you have to find them a way to get into court or something like that, that's tough. That's tough on the, you know, from a personal perspective, from an emotionally draining perspective too.
Right, for sure. So we find, and I think this is one way we set ourselves apart from maybe some of the other lawyers and firms is, you know, we really try to show that we care about the client, and we genuinely do, you know, but we, since it's such an emotional time for these people and they're going through so much loss, you can give some extra service if you're there for them, right? If you're you listen to them. And it may not always be for legal reasons, right? They may just want to vent, or they may want some support, or have a friend, you know, to talk to. And, you know, if you give that extra time, you know, they really appreciate it, right? And it builds your relationship with the client. So you get to know them better.
Sure.
So you can tell their story better.
Yeah.
So, and do you find that the same thing in family law?
Yeah, I think we do. It's very similar. I know early on, we would get, it was a lesson I had to learn early on, which is if they call you at 12 o'clock at night, to say, listen, we're going to our, you know, my husband and I or whoever are arguing over who's going to walk the dog that day because we're going through a divorce. Perhaps that's a call that they could have set. But for the most part, when they do that, when, you know, we find that when family law clients call us, usually it's something urgent. You know, he picked up the kid from daycare. He's not supposed to. The court order says he's not allowed to have him this week.
Right.
Or you get into these protection from abuse situations, which are obviously much more visceral and they're much more quick happening, right? And what I mean by that is you have, you know, you answer the call and they're like, listen, he just beat me up. What do I do? Right. You miss that call. You don't know if that guy's around. You don't know if the client is safe or not, because obviously that's the first and foremost issue. But yeah, I mean, for sure, like those are the kinds of things that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And we understand that it's part of the business, and it's also part of just being a decent person, right? So, you know, you can't always know what the person is going through. I'll never know 100%. But there are patterns that happen, and we've seen these things, right? Like I said earlier, when people are using their kids as pawns for money, or they want the house or something. But large part, what we find is when we get the cases early on and the divorce is just happening or the abuse is just happening, that's when it's the heightened level of, I don't want to call it handholding, but they need to be walked through the entire process, which we would do anyway, but with a much more kid glove approach, right? Because we know that their emotions are raw.
Right.
So if they're calling us 10, 12, 15 times a day, we understand that they need something. And sometimes they'll have simple questions, you know, like I don't know why, but I had a client one time that asked me if it was okay for her to start dating. And I can't answer. Right. But I did. Right. But then you'll have, you know, you'll have those, obviously, like I said, those much more serious ones where like, hey, listen, he picked up the kid from school. I'm supposed to get him today. Now I don't think he's going to get, you know, he's going to give him back.
Right.
So now you have to calm them down. You have to understand, okay, listen, this is what we're going to do. You have to be ready with a plan. And I think that comes with experience. But I also think, at least when I first started out, I would put myself in the shoes of the client. Say, well, what would I do? Of course, I'd be upset if my kid was taken or something like that. But you can't always do that. So a lot of this comes with experience, and you go ahead and you deal with the situation they come. But I think the calming voice for the client is the most important thing.
Right.
And then I think everything falls into place.
Kind of the behind the scenes part that people don't really think of as lawyers in that way, right?
They teach you that law school.
No, and they see you, the lawyer shows in the courtroom, right?
Objection, that's what
right. Right. Yeah. Or, you know, doing some kind of, you know, awesome questioning, right? Or breaking somebody down on the witness. There's the smoke, whatever, right? You know, that's what they think of lawyering, but there's a lot behind the scenes of just kind of being a good person to your clients and making sure that they're supported and feel as good as they can during a difficult time.
And I think actually probably in personal injury, for sure in family law, I think it's, if you had to put a percentage on it, I don't know that I like to, but I would say more, a bigger percentage of this behind the scenes, you know, stuff that we're talking about is more important than the day-to-day, you know, going to court, filing a petition, you know, doing a custody conference,
right?
You know, or being in front of a judge.
Right, because you have to have a bond with your client.
Sure.
And know them personally to be able to really represent them the best. Do you find that in family law?
Yeah, and I will tell you some of the difficult stuff that you have to ask, right? You don't always want to ask, right? If you were, you know, talking to a friend or something, you know, let's say an acquaintance, you probably wouldn't ask specific certain questions, right? And sometimes you have to.
Right.
And it's tough because it can get awkward, but you need to have certain information because you have to anticipate that that's going to, it could in times make or break their, you know, case, especially when it's involving kids, you know. So, I mean, listen, we've seen cases where parents have abused their children physically, sexually. So, you know, you can imagine those questions get difficult. And sometimes, you know, you have issues where one parent doesn't see what the other parent is doing. And that can be difficult, right? Because it's such an unbelievable shock to them. Then you have to kind of be like, okay, well, here's why we think that. And here's the situation, and they have this sort of aha moment, and they, you know, they believe that they've been living with a monster. Right. And that's tough. That's tough because, you know, that could be the first year of marriage, it could be 20 years in.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Right. And with the harder cases, I mean, does that sometimes take a toll on you emotionally?
Oh, for sure. You know, we've seen cases where, remember we talked about earlier, parents will withhold the child from the other parent. So now you have a situation, let's say you get into court and it's been 2 months since the one parent has seen the other child, has seen the child because the other parent's been holding the child.
Right.
Wrongfully, especially when it's wrongfully.
Which you can only imagine what that's like.
Yeah, especially for the kid. And then they get attached. The child gets attached to that parent because in a lot of these cases, the parent that's holding the child is coaching the child.
Right.
You know, your dad is bad. Your mom is not good. Your mom is mean.
Our alienation, you call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Parental alienation. And what will happen is, like we had a couple weeks ago, you're standing there and you had to have police officers physically take the child and give them to the other parent, but it caused scene. The kid is hysterical. The kid is attached to the parent, doesn't leave.
Which is traumatizing to the child, obviously.
Sure. You would think people would know better, but, you know, they're in the heat of the moment. You know, and sometimes they have good reasons for doing it. Sometimes they have bad reasons for doing it. But when you see stuff like that, it never gets easier.
Right.
Right.
I found when I see a difficult case, you know, there's not much you can do to change other than to obviously represent them the best you can and be there for the person. But personally, you know, I might go out for a run or go to the gym or something just to relieve the stress. Do you have any kind of coping mechanisms that...
Yeah, for sure. I will tell you that I'll have to set aside a case's file, let's say, for, you know, if it's not anything that's burning, but we know that we've had a significant event occur, like the one I just described, I'll set it aside and I'll go work on something else. But largely what I'll do is, I don't know how much they want to do it anymore, but I hang out with the kids.
Right, 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 right.
But, you know, it's not cool to hang out with dad anymore. So, no, but we, you know, we'll go to sporting events. You know, I take the youngest that likes to go to the movies, so that's our thing. So we'll do that sort of thing. You just have to be able to. It's hard. You have to turn off the fountain, right?
Right, right.
And whatever that may be, but yeah, that's what we do.
Maybe seeing some of this makes you appreciate the time you have with your own kids more.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I'll tell you that when we see families that have been torn apart. For whatever reason, it doesn't matter, you know, like people can have drinking problems and it causes chaos. But yeah, I mean, you have to take into consideration what it does to the kids, which, you know, I would hope that more people do, but sadly often we don't see that.
Right.
The kid all of a sudden is living in another home, you know, he's being dragged between houses, whatever, on whatever basis, every other week, every other weekend, you know, it becomes difficult, but, you know, I think that one of the biggest things that, you know, some of our more successful clients have done is they're just honest with the kids. And I think it's important that, listen, things have changed. This has become your quote unquote new normal. Whatever you need to do will help you to adjust. But in those cases, usually that means the parents are working together. And I think that's helpful. It's when they're not that becomes the biggest thing, you know, and then
that makes it more difficult for the kids to adjust when the parents aren't getting along or working together.
Sure. And then we have a converse like situation when you had asked me earlier about difficult cases. So if one parent is abusing the other physically, we've seen situations where the parent who's being abused doesn't want to do anything about it, right? And you have the cycle of violence that happens where they leave, they come back, they leave and they come back. But I've often told those parents that I understand that it's hard to leave, whether you're financially attached to the other party or you don't want to leave, you want to stay for the kids. You have to understand that these kids, no matter what age, whether they're 2 years old or 10 years old, they're witnessing something,
right?
And they'll manifest emotions about that. Two-year-olds we've heard about that would go when one parent was striking the other, he'll go, he went and he actually like was kicking the other parent in order to get him to stop. He didn't understand that that's what he was doing. It was just like an emotional reaction.
Right.
But then you also have to take into consideration, listen, if you're going to stay in this relationship, if you have a daughter, for example, and it's the father who's abusing the mother, the daughter will think that that's okay. So there's statistics that indicate, and there've been plenty of studies that indicate that children of violence either come abuse themselves or, you know, in their later relationships when they're older.
Correct.
Or, you know, they abuse, right? Because it's what they learn.
Yep.
So
I think it's acceptable in a way or something.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, it can be tough. I mean, sometimes you have to have heart-to-heart conversations with your clients, and sometimes you have to tell them things maybe they don't want to hear, but that's what you have to do. And so, you know, it's not your job to tell them what they want to hear. You have to tell them what they have. Those things are different, and they're not always intertwined.
Right.
You know?
So changing gears a little bit, I was just curious because you see a lot of failed marriages, right, for different reasons.
Sure.
And I'm just curious because maybe this could be a lesson for either married people or people looking for a partner that are single. What is the, what do you find is most common or the most common causes of marriages failing?
So initially I will tell you that I used to think, or perhaps it was even something that was like in the statistics would show, previously would be that it was, one party cheating the other, right? And I think there is a statistic out there that says that 50% of marriages end in divorce.
Right. But then if you peel it back a little bit, there can be reasons for the cheating, right?
Sure, absolutely.
It can be like almost a symptom of something deeper.
I think it's a lack of communication, right? Because what we've seen is, and sometimes it's interesting because we'll have clients come in and they'll say, well, you know, he drinks all the time and he doesn't want to stop, or, you know, she's cheating and I know she's doing it. But the back reason, like you said, peel back the onion, as to why the drinking happened or the adultery happened or whatever,
right,
is because they're not communicating. You're not communicating with one another.
That's so big in an unhealthy way.
Sure. Because when you're not communicating and you're upset at something, right? And it could be trivial, but one thing leads to another, which leads to resentment. And then they're like, okay, well, that party's not listening anyway, even though, you know, maybe you didn't communicate properly or effectively. I read a thing once where there was sort of like this like anecdotal story where the husband said to the wife, can you just put the glass into the sink as opposed to putting it on the side somewhere? But she wouldn't do it. She just kept, continually would put it on the table.
Right.
And the lesson behind that is it would upset the parent. It would upset the husband, but it seems trivial. But when they're asking you to do something as simple as put like a glass into the sink that you've used, you're not taking that person's, opinion into consideration.
Almost right. Like a message that they're not being valued.
Correct. Correct. And then that lack of value or that feel of lack of value, perceived or otherwise, will say, you know what? She doesn't care anyway, or he doesn't care anyway. All of a sudden, not coming home at night.
Then they're looking for somebody that they think will care.
Right? Sure.
Or they're drinking to kind of just mask the feelings.
Absolutely. And then that leads to where we're at, right? I mean, sometimes it could be, we've seen stuff, not even like my own thing items, but we've seen from talking to other attorneys. If you have a parent who's drinking, right, and they just don't care about the bills getting paid, they don't care about showing up and going to work, then the other party will start to think, well, listen, you don't care about our family, right? And then they can't communicate about maybe what led to the drinking. And then instead it becomes, well, he doesn't care about our family, I'm leaving him.
Right.
And then, you know, what started out as perhaps a simple drink led to his becoming an alcoholic, and not digging into what the reasons for that were, right?
Yep.
Now you're 6 months later. There's no communication about what's going on. The other party, one party doesn't want to hear it, or they're not listening, or they're done listening because they've heard the same story over and over again. And then they're in my office, right? Got to file divorce. I want to make sure the kids are okay.
You think more issues could be worked out in marriages if both parties would kind of really take a hard look at their own actions and own, you know, their actions or their contribution to how they got to a bad place and work to fix that? It seems like a lot of times, you know, the spouses that are kind of not getting along, they just want to focus on what the other spouse is doing, right? But maybe if they both looked at what they're doing and how they contributed it and tried to work on that, it might help.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true 100%. So, you know, sometimes we'll see things like, okay, you know, we were supposed to go out, you know, let's say husband and wife are supposed to go out this past Saturday, you know, but, you know, he blew me off, you know, for, you know, one party blows the other one off. I got to go to work, right? You do that once, you do that twice, do that three times. Now it becomes a habit. Your person's constantly working. Listen, you know, you and I are in a business where you might have to work all the time or a lot.
Right.
But what will happen is, you know, the person who's been working a lot gets served divorce paperwork, and he says, well, what happened?
I'm just trying to provide, right?
Yeah. However, it's not all about money, and it's not all about, you know, what kind of house you live in, right? Or what kind of car you drive. Because remember, you know, if you're out working all the time, and I'll be honest, listen, we're all guilty of that in one point or another, but if you're not seeing the kids, if you're not seeing your significant other, then we see that that sort of crosses that divide. But that person who, you know, who's been working all the time, he's got to look in the mirror, like you said, and say, listen, well, maybe I was working too much, or maybe I was at the office too long, or maybe I talked to a client for too much, and I didn't take into consideration what was going on. But again, that goes back to the communication.
Maybe they needed to be more present at home.
Sure, right. Sure. You have to find, and that goes, I think, to like what lawyers, I personally believe, the lawyers have this issue about this work-life balance.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, Todd, you have two boys. Could you imagine not seeing them for 2 weeks, you know, for whatever reason? You know, and that's, you know, and as these kids are growing up, they want their mom or dad around. And, you know, and it's a lot of times, like, you can't get that time back. So I think that becomes an issue, but
there needs to be some kind of balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I think when those families that are successful have that balance. But I will tell you also that there are people that just grow apart, right?
Right.
Somebody wakes up one morning and, you know, looks over at their spouse and says, listen, I just don't love you anymore, right? And it's okay, right? Because maybe the other party was feeling that too. And they'll come together and they'll have an agreement and they'll say, okay, this is how we're going to divide the time with the kids. Pay child support, you know, we'll go to activities together. They may not sit together on the same bleachers. They'll sit at one side or the other. But, you know, I think that that's the healthiest way to do it.
Right. If they're honest with each other and they don't go to the lengths of cheating or trying to cope with it, but they're just honest about it and reach some kind of understanding, it's probably better off.
I will tell you that one of the more amazing cases that we have are when the older, we'll say people in their 60s, they'll get divorced. And I've had more than one that has said to me, listen, I should have done this earlier. I knew at 35, we've been married for 40 years at this point, but I knew at 35 that I didn't love her anymore, but I stayed for the kids. And he's like, well, now I'm 65. What do I do now?
Right.
Right. So, you know, it wasn't an issue where they were arguing. It, you know, they raised, I think, maybe two or three kids or whatever. And, you know, just down the line, he waited too long. But if there had been that communication, you know, early on, you know, maybe he doesn't make that decision that he makes, you know. And I understand some people want to stay for the kids, but it doesn't matter a lot. And, you know, what will happen is that, the kids will feel it. Like I said earlier, they'll sense that there's this tension between the parents, right? So even though people that stay and they say, listen, I'm going to stay in this marriage because I don't want to ruin the kids' lives. But is it really healthy for the kids? You know, one of the considerations they have to take into consideration is, you know, well, is it healthy for the kids to know that we're fighting all the time?
Being in a stressful environment.
Right. Where, you know, why doesn't, you know, dad, why is dad not home when mom's home? Right. Or when mom comes home, dad leaves. Right. On purpose. You know, they may never voice that to the kids, but the kids know.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I would tell you that, you know, I'm fairly confident 90% of the clients that we have that end up in a divorce, their kids will say they knew, right? Some will even say, you know, the kids already know, you know? And it's like, well, the kids already knew that we should have been divorced even before we thought should have been divorced. Because they're living in an unhealthy environment.
I've heard people say that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's tough, you know?
So communication is king. That's one lesson we believe, right?
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah, the flip side is, you know, maybe I wouldn't have a business if people were communicating all the time. But sure, yeah, I think
we don't wish for anything bad to happen, but
life happens.
It happens, yeah,
for sure.
We're here to help when it does, right?
Absolutely. You know, we're always open to, you know, if I could end on a light story, we had people who fought over a parrot, and the parrot was one of those that could talk,
right.
And the wife hated the parrot, but the husband loved the parrot. But because they didn't get along, she purposely didn't want to give him the parrot until she got tired of this bird. Because the bird had the ability to mimic the sound of the kids. So they had this parrot upstairs. It was a huge parrot. And the wife would be downstairs at some point. And all of a sudden, the wife hears, like, what she believes are the kids screaming. She comes running upstairs to where she hears the sound coming from. She walks in. Parrot just starts laughing hilariously, right? He's just like cackling away or whatever. And she was like, you better get this bird out of here, because he would do that on purpose. I guess the bird knew that he hated her. That she hated
her.
Absolutely. So, you know, she's like, I'm tired of running up the stairs to get the, you know, to shut this parrot up, because I think the kids are, you know, are being hurt or something. Right. But yeah. So we've had people that have, they don't have kids, but they have dogs, and they'll have a custody agreement for a dog.
Really?
You know, you can have him over the weekend, and next weekend is your weekend. It's a little weird.
Is that Courtney Forrest? I guess.
Dogs and animals are, animals are property. Well, you can sort of have a custody order like you would for a kid.
Right.
Right? You know, like I said, with the parrot was an issue. We've seen, you know, people say, listen, I want the dog this weekend. I want the dog next weekend. And we've actually had them where they were breeders of dogs, and they had to agree to how many of these puppies each of them would get. And we had to write that into an agreement. You know, listen, it happens. And they, you know, they did have puppies, so I guess they're expensive. So, but yeah, those are some of the funnier stories. But yeah, for the large part, you know, people, you know, you would think that they would get along better, but they don't. Life happens and stuff happens, and that's what we're here to do, to help them through that,
right.
largely when it's their hardest part of their life.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah, you know, much like your client.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right, Dimitri. Well, this has been fun and interesting.
Absolutely.
Been a good time, which I expected.
I agree.
I thank you for coming in today.
Absolutely. Anytime you guys want me back, maybe have some other war stories.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. How can anybody reach you if they need to find you?
So we do have a website, obviously. Our phone number is 267-684-6880. You know, Law Office of Dimitri Smirnov, PC. Our email is simple, myfirstname@smirnovlaw.com. We're open to, you know, any inquiries, and, you know, we're always open to help.
All right. And I would highly recommend you. You're a great guy, and you care. And that puts you ahead of a lot of people, and you do a great job.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're right.